Hello, hello, and welcome to the Mostly Soccer Podcast. We are back in studio. Archer barking outside. My name is Michael J. Dalo, and today I'm here with Jimmy. Jimmy what today?
Jimmy Studio.
I love that as soon as we start, this fucking dog has to start.
I was going to say, we have been here talking for, what, 15 minutes?
Yep.
Not a peep.
No.
He heard the microphone. He said, it's my chance.
Literally, if I'm on a work call, instant. As soon as he hears me on the phone talking to someone else, he has to start barking.
Hey, that's what he does. My dog does the exact same thing. She will be sleeping. The second somebody speaks that she does not recognize the voice, immediately loses her mind.
These dogs are a pain.
Every single time, immediately.
But we're not here to talk about dogs, Jimmy. Actually, maybe we are, because you got that dog in you.
Oh, of course.
Last That's the kind of back in studio shit that you can't get over Skype.
No, that chemistry's not there on Skype. The in-person feel, the reading the energy in the room.
You have a nasty energy.
That's what I live off of.
That's why I've kept you on Skype. You're a nasty man with a nasty energy. Yes. But in all seriousness, I'm glad to be back.
So am I. I don't even know how long it's been. I think if you listen to like the last four episodes, every episode starts with, we've been away for a long time. We could just play it on loop at this point and it would just be consistent.
Yeah. The good thing is that no one has expressed that they have missed us. That's the bad news for us, I guess.
I was going to say, is it good or bad?
It's good in the sense that no one cares we've been gone, but also sad that no one listens to our podcast.
That's true. One day it'll change. One day.
One day. We've been saying one day for a while. We still believe.
It might help if we didn't record like once every 4 months.
That is factual. Factual information. The last time we did record was pre-World Cup final.
Yeah. I honestly thought we did one after the World Cup final. And I think it's because we planned to and then something happened.
I had COVID.
I had COVID too. We both had COVID like a week apart from each other. And that kind of really, really killed that.
Yep. And then I don't know what's happened. But we're back now and that's all that matters. And Messi is a world champion. I know that we don't need to talk about that really because it's kind of not forgotten, obviously, but, you know, a month or two behind at this point. But very excited about that. That game was fantastic. Maybe the best game ever.
Oh, out of this world. I mean, a lot has happened.
Yeah.
I mean, that game lived up to all the hype, which was nice. We've watched the fall of the great rival. Messi's great rival has decided to move to Saudi Arabia. So far, not so good. Two games in, no goals. It's been a very interesting few months.
Guy is absolutely cooked. We don't even have to mention his name. Everyone knows who we're talking about. When you call someone cooked, it's just Cristiano Ronaldo right in the brain.
It's sad. It's kind of sad. I mean, it's not sad, but it's not because it's him. But it's like, it's just weird to see, I guess is the way to put it.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, he could have came to the MLS, I think, a more competitive league.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would have been less of a full-on retirement if he was in the MLS.
I think it also would have been more like publicity. I feel like it would have been... Supposedly, there was a way they were going to get the money close, like whether it was like image rights or something, like they were going to find a way to make it money work for him as much as possible. I kind of feel like they made the wrong move. I don't know. I just feel the whole thing's so weird. He's so out of the like he's just out of the football world now. He's just out of it.
It just feels like that's it. That I mean, it is the retirement of Cristiano Ronaldo, like
basically,
and it's time. He's not been very good this past year and a half, and you know he needs to go somewhere and beat up on these Saudi Arabian teams and cash his $200 million a week paycheck, whatever he's making, something absurd. I guess that would have swayed me there as well. But anyways, Jimmy, we're here, and it's nearly February, and Arsenal Football Club are top of the table, playing some of the most beautiful football I've seen in a very long time. Life is good.
Yeah, I mean, I can't tell you you're wrong. They sit on 50 points on 19 games played.
Incredible. The season is too long, though. to have 19 more games to have to suffer through now. I mean, there's been very limited suffering watching Arsenal this season. Yeah. It's been insanely fun.
Mm-hmm.
but 19 more games is a long way to go. And I kind of believe, but I'm tentatively believing.
Well, I think that is a good way to approach it, to be believe. You should believe, but you should do it cautiously, which is not a strength of the general Arsenal public.
No.
From what I've seen on Twitter, it is not it's just not the way they go.
Yeah.
You guys have got a little taste of success and it's already getting to you.
No. I think that the consensus has been like everyone is extremely happy and everyone is cautiously optimistic. Mm-hmm. But, you know, yesterday Arsenal and City played for the first time this season in the FA Cup and the game was kind of a dud. Really, I'm not taking much from that. And I don't think you are either as a City fan.
There's nothing to take away from it.
It was like both teams kind of cared, but also they really didn't. And the game was very soft and
both teams went into that game. I think honestly, the thing both teams cared about most was making sure it was not a draw.
Yeah, seriously. I think I might have texted you and just said anything but a replay. Yeah. Like, I don't care if Arsenal was just not a replay, no injuries.
Yeah, that was a key. That was a key. And City didn't escape with no injuries.
I know.
John Stones, who's been fantastic pretty much the whole season, had a great World Cup too. I thought he was clearly the best defender for England in the World Cup. He now injured. We don't know the extent of it. Pep had some strange comments after the game. I don't think you probably didn't see him, but basically said he knew from the first minute that he didn't look like he was right. Not in terms of injury, but like mentally, he didn't look like he was ready for the
game.
So I it's a weird thing. But yeah, the very little takeaway from that game. I don't think either team really offered much.
No.
I think Ake was great, Ake's been great. So it seems like he'll get a little credit after this. But Archer agrees, apparently.
Yeah.
Big Wait, Nathan Ake fan.
Always have to deal with the dog barking. But yeah, I don't know. The game was kind of a nothing. And they're meeting again in a few weeks. I kind of felt like neither manager wanted to give anything away a little bit. And, you know, Arsenal sat, you know, four or five players, and they have an extremely consistent lineup every game this season, I think, for the most part, aside from Jesus and Eddie swapping in because of injury. I think they've had basically the same exact lineup. So you could tell that it wasn't the priority of Arsenal or really City, but still... these two teams have a whole lot to show, and the tail end of this season is going to be insane.
Yeah, I agree completely. I don't think this game, like, I wouldn't use this game as like a barometer or anything based on what that next game is going to be. It's going to be completely different.
Yeah.
And I think for Arsenal's perspective, Arsenal have been fantastic. They have really, really been great. Even post World Cup, they've jumped right back to what they were doing. City, on the other hand, have been
up and down.
Up and down. Very lackluster was the word I was going to use. Obviously, their season was saved by the dramatic comeback against Spurs.
Yeah.
A first half that looked like it was done. I mean, they let Emerson score against them at that point.
It felt like it was... I texted Brooke because she was at work, and I was like, I am emotional right now. Because if Manchester City lose this game, like I'm starting to believe. Like, I think it might happen. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I had money on Spurs from the start because they always give City a game.
They do.
They always do. And, of course, they go 2-0 up. I'm thinking, at the very least, I'm going to get just my money back. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, City come back and score 4.
Yeah, I mean, led by Riyad Mahrez, who's been really, quite frankly, the only player for City that's been good. Outside Ake, really. But outside, like, this return of the World Cup, post-World Cup, whatever you want to call it, Mahrez has been kind of back to himself.
Yeah, he looks great.
Which he needs to be because the majority of the team is kind of sleepwalking.
It did feel like, I don't know, and from watching City this season, they look slower. They look bored of what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's such a weird way. They look a step down.
Well, I think I know what it is, and this is what I really wanted to talk about in this episode. I think City are, and these are the things where people get so upset when you talk about teams that spend money to say that they need like a lot of investment. But I think it's very, very clear that City need to make some dramatic improvements to the squad, because I think there's players that are going to move. And that's what I think the buy-in is not quite what it was. And Pep's talked about this. He's had some really frosty interviews. And, like, basically, he said to, you know, you win 4 out of 5, you get complacent. And I think that there's people who are complacent. But I also think there's people who are not 100% invested in winning. Like, not in winning, but, like, their heads are somewhere else. Like, Bernardo Silva's been trying to move for 2 years.
Yeah.
He gives it everything when he's on the field. But when your heart is just, you know, slightly not in it as much as it was, that can make all the difference in the world on the field. Whereas you see the Arsenal team, everybody is 100% invested in the cause. And I think that makes a difference. And it's like, these City players are professionals. They're great players. And honestly, on the soccer field, most of the time, the talent wins out. Like, people talk about, like, oh, they don't have the passion, whatever. It doesn't matter, really. If you give a professional level of performance, if you can give just that, your talent usually will make the difference. And I think in a lot of ways it has in games for City this season. I think they've won games based off of the goals from Haaland alone in a lot of places where they haven't played great. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm optimistic that where they sit, 5 points behind, but Arsenal have a game in hand, so you will call it 8 points, just to say. There's plenty of season left to make that up.
There's too much, actually. And I think, you know, if Arsenal can, they have Everton and Brentford before City. Mm-hmm. And they both play before that midweek game on the 15th. Mm-hmm. I am so excited that I'm going to be there in person. That's going to be absolutely incredible. But I think that is, as it stands right now, that is the game of the season.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if Arsenal win that game, they go potentially 11 points clear. Mm-hmm. That's a big gap.
That's a big gap.
Arsenal messing up 3 times, which is obviously very possible. But City would have to remain perfect. And if City win that, then the gap reduces to potentially 5. Or lower.
Or 3 if Arsenal stumble in one of these games before, potentially. And I do want to say, I want to be very critical of City because I think we need to be critical that they're not at their best. But I do feel a bit hard done by the fact that the gap is this because of the United game, which we didn't get to talk about, where I truly think we saw, this was the closest I've ever come to agreeing with you of, like, match fixing levels.
Yeah.
Because that was the most egregious call I've ever seen.
Yeah, the no call.
The no call on the Marcus Rashford's offsides.
Yeah, vicious. Really a vicious, vicious call. I don't know how that's clearly impeding the play.
I understood he technically did not touch the ball. He ran with the ball, whether he was touching it or not, shielding the ball, impacting both the defenders who are trying to catch up to him because he's the one who perceived to have the ball in the goalkeeper. Not calling that offside is a travesty. If this ends up being like a 1 or 2 point title race, I will be very upset. I will be happy for you. I will say that. But I will be very upset that it came down to something that I feel was just unfair.
Yeah. I fully agree that that call is horrific. Yeah. And if that happened to Arsenal, I would be off the wall.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's hard to say, like, if it comes down to 1 point, you'll be mad about that because there's much of the season, and City have already been pretty poor, I think, in a lot of different games this year.
The Everton game.
Yeah, that it's stuff like that that makes me confident that Arsenal can do this because, like you said, the players are so bought in. I don't know if I've seen a team since like Liverpool, like the year that they won, like completely, like with a fire under their ass, like Arsenal have. They're really, really well coached. I think Arsenal are the best setup team in the league by a country mile. Like, watching them play City yesterday and not having their full lineup, even in that first half, like, Arsenal were in control of that game. And City had a pretty strong lineup throughout that match. It just felt to me, in that game at least, and throughout the season, that, like, Arsenal are just doing something different that other teams aren't doing. I know it's kind of a copy of Pep's system, but it's working so nicely.
It's slightly different. It's very similar.
Yeah.
I think Arsenal almost play it a little more aggressively, whereas, like, your possession levels are not where, like, a peak Pep team's possession levels are. Almost kind of like City right now, because City's possession levels are not quite what they were in the past. But I think the key for Arsenal's success with this is been consistency with their lineup and formation, which is they've stayed the same. And that's where we've seen City have the dip, which is I cannot tell you what the lineup or even the formation is going to be for the next game because Pep has changed it, which he's been forced to based off of the performance of players and injuries as well. But, I mean, the consistency of Arsenal. You know what they're going to run out there. You know who's going to play before the match starts. Like, we can predict right now, sit here and predict what the lineup's going to be when they play City. Like,
no, I know out, exactly we already know exactly what it's going to be. Yeah, there's no question.
So that has helped them dramatically because I don't think they've had that necessarily in the past few seasons. So I think that's really helped them. I think the performance of everyone. I want to talk about your boy Eddie and how much he stepped up.
Man, but that's the beauty of this team and the system that Arteta has created, right? Like, I think if something, God forbid, happens to Eddie, like, I think Martinelli, even though it's not his position, could step in and do really well there, or even Trossard. It feels like parts are interchangeable aside from the midfield. Without Xhaka or Partey, I think Arsenal are fucking toast. And that's why some of these signings or potential signings are going to be so important in these next few days. They desperately need another midfielder. And, you know, hopefully Casado from Brighton, I'm trying not to mispronounce the name, will come in and strengthen that. But yeah, I mean, Eddie has been incredible. And he's put in some special performances, really big goals, especially against United. Yeah, I mean, I was worried when Jesus got hurt. I thought, well, here we go. That's the turning point. And, you know, I think Gabriel Jesus has a lot of work to do to get his spot back now.
Yeah. And when is he due back?
You know, after the World Cup, they were saying 2 months. Mm-hmm. And now Arteta said in an interview, hopefully next month.
Okay.
So I'm guessing probably late March.
Some point in March.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be important to get him back. It's definitely important to get him back. He's a player, we've talked about him in the past, which is when he's hot, when he's in rhythm, he's an unplayable player. You can't stop him. And even if he's not necessarily scoring goals that game, he just has such an impact. He's a streaky player.
Definitely.
So, and he's a player who gets injured. Yeah. I don't think there's been one season where he hasn't missed at least a month. It happens every single year.
Yeah.
But when he's in rhythm, if he does come back in March and he can get in rhythm towards the end of the season, that could be a very, very important piece of this team. So
yeah, and Arsenal are going for it. I mean, you know, they were about to spend $80 million on Midrick, who ended up going to Chelsea and looks like he might be a gem of a player.
Yeah. If I can say one thing, I didn't really know much about him. I've seen like the YouTube highlights, but I don't buy those things very much. And again, how much can we rate the Ukrainian league? Like, you know what I mean? Like, and they're not even, obviously with everything going on in Ukraine, they're playing in another country. But the first game I saw him play against, it was against Liverpool.
To be fair, James Milner is 100 years old.
That too. And to be fair, also Liverpool themselves are a shell of what they used to be right now. But you can't teach pace.
No.
And the combo of pace and technical ability, which he looks like he has, is a very, very scary combination. And
yeah,
he looks like he could be whatever the hell Chelsea's doing. I mean, Chelsea have gone kind of haywire.
Ballistic on the transfer market.
And which I understand, because like I said, I think in a lot of ways, I think City need like a big transfer. This summer, I think they need to move like 4 or 5 people out and bring in 4 or 5.
Yeah.
Chelsea are doing the bring in like 6 or 7, but they've yet to move anybody on. And that's the thing I don't understand. Now, people are linked. I know that Ziyech has been linked with a couple moves away.
Yeah, but what are you getting for those moves?
Pulisic's been linked with moves away. But then the injuries that kind of stop those things. I mean, right now, Chelsea are going to be forced to, when they have to make decisions on their squad for Europe, they're going to have to leave people off that are going to create some difficulties in the dressing room. Because right now, that squad is massive.
They're stacked with talent. They spent what? I mean, they just keep making signings every day. It's something new.
Yeah,
they got to be close to $500 million at this point.
I think it's over. I thought it was 630 or something. Last thing I saw,
it's absurd.
It's really crazy. It's out of this world how much money they've put out there. But I get it from Chelsea's perspective of they understand that the team needed to refresh. But my point is, at some point, you need to actually sell people. Because right now, if I was interested, like, say I'm a German team, say I'm Bayern Munich, to try and sign Kai Havertz, why am I going to offer a fair market price for Kai Havertz when I know that Chelsea need to move people on?
Yeah.
All the buying teams that are interested in Chelsea's players are at such an advantage right now. I see no way that Chelsea can hold teams to negotiating strong when it comes to buying, like selling these players, especially if they don't move some in January. We're going to go into the summer knowing that they have to move on like 10 people.
I know.
And I mean, I'd be very excited if I'm a team like wanting to buy these players, and they're talented players. There's good players. Like, there's people who are going to leave Chelsea who underperformed at Chelsea who are going to do great things. I mean, look at Timo Werner, who's gone and scored like already 15 goals or whatever since he's been back at Leipzig. Like, their players are going to go perform other places.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we were talking about investment, and we have to talk about Chelsea if you're talking about that. But back to Arsenal, I'll just say, you know, Trossard, I think for 25 mil, that looks already like a fantastic signing, a complete bargain. I mean, I'm thankful that Brighton were forced to let him go, because I think he's a special player. I really like Trossard. And, you know, not spending 80 mil on one player has allowed us to also sign a center back, who I don't know much about other than his wife is the twerk champion of the world.
Of apparently. The world. The world apparently championship. The world.
I'll take it. And we're also now in the mix for a midfielder. So, you know, Arsenal are pushing. They're pushing for the title. And I'm excited. I hope for good things. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I like I said, I think you have the right mindset. I'm excited that you're going to get to be there for this match. I think it's going to be a dynamic game. I think it's going to say a lot, whichever way it goes. I mean, if I'm you, I'm prepared for the 0-0. Just be ready for that to happen.
No, I'm not.
But I don't see it with these two teams. Like, I just think we're going to learn a lot about both of them in that game.
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to be a 0-0. I think it might be a shootout, because Arsenal are going to push, and, you know, City are going to have chances as well. Arsenal did a good job at containing Haaland yesterday. Mm-hmm. I mean, Rob Holding is fucking hysterical to watch. He is not up to par for this team. Not anymore. But I love Rob Holding so much, because he is just a classic shithouse player. Like, pull your shirt, elbow you in the back of the head. He's that kind of guy, and he does it with a big smile on his face.
But you need that in a way.
100%.
You need somebody like that.
He is so perfect for 85th minute. If you have to start Rob Holding, yeah, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
But if you can
that's fair.
Throw him into the mix, fucking toss some bodies, that's what you want.
Yeah.
But I do think City game is going to be a shootout. Extremely excited for that. I think we've talked enough about Arsenal and City, though. We should probably...
I have one last thing to say with City.
Nope.
One thing I have to say, because I haven't got to talk about it on this podcast. Rico Lewis is an absolute gem of a player. A gem of a player. To be 18 years old, to play the position he's playing in Pep's system, he's basically, in a lot of ways, he's a Joshua Kimmich reincarnate. The
hot take.
The right back midfielder role that Pep really crafted with Kimmich. I mean, he had it with Lam, but Kimmich was like the protege to that. He's doing the same thing with Lewis. I'm not saying that he's that level of a player that he's going to be, but to be that age and being able to perform in that role, and he's been very, very good in doing it. I thought he was very good in the like 50 to 60 minutes he played against Arsenal yesterday.
Yeah, except Trossard had his number a little bit.
And again, he's got to learn. He's a young player, literally turned 18 in December. Like, he looks like a kid. I mean, look at him. You text me the first time he played and called him a 12-year-old. So to be able to fit in this team and play, I just want to say I love seeing that. And if they do end up having a title charge and he's part of that, I think that's a massive thing.
Yeah, I agree. But let's move on. I want to talk about Manchester United.
Okay.
What are your thoughts on Manchester United?
If I was a Manchester United fan, I would be ecstatic.
Interesting.
For two reasons. One, they actually look good. Like, they're actually fun to watch. Like, I actually think they're fun to watch. For the first time in a long time, I think they're fun to watch. I'm not saying they're amazing. I'm just saying I think that they, compared to where they've been, They're far more fun to watch than they've been. They are a chat. They can win any game, no matter who they're playing. They're at that level. They're well coached, which is something they have not been since Sir Alex left, like that long.
Yes, I agree with
that. They're actually well coached. They actually know, they have a system, and they know how to play it, which was kind of like, and they got a little bit there with LA at the end where they were kind of just full on counterattacking, but they seem organized. I think that Ten Hag has a plan. I think he's a very good manager.
I agree.
And I think he has a plan. I think if they continue to enable him to bring in players he wants for his plan, they're actually in the right direction. So that's why if I was a United fan, I'd be as positive as I've been. They're not there yet. The crazy people, stupid, crazy people on Twitter and stuff that are like, oh, we're in the title race. It's like, no, you're not. You're not that good. You shouldn't have beaten City anyway. I already talked about that. I'm not going to go down that. Arsenal beat you. Like, you're a good team. I think they're a good team. They have some very good players. They're headed in the right direction.
I agree.
And it's been a long time since I think we've said that. So I'd be happy if I was a United fan.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't know that I think they're a particularly fun team to watch. I think watching Marcus Rashford since the end of the World Cup has been very fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is like reborn, rejuvenated. I mean, he does this what, every 6 months?
Yeah. He's like a Barry hibernates and he comes out and he's ready to go.
But yeah, he's looked incredible. And I agree, Ten Hag does have a system, and he's brought in some very solid players. Lisandro Martinez, who looked like he might be a bust, has really turned around, has been one of the better defenders in the league. Anthony, I don't know that that's anything so special.
I don't know how I feel about him.
We've texted about this a few times, that like prices are out of control.
Yeah.
And I... like 100 mil for him. He's more of like a 50 to 60 type of player.
Well, I want to throw price out the window. Because I think at this point you have to. Like, the thing is, the price tag will follow you. It's the same that follows Jack Grealish. Like, Jack Grealish is perfectly fine most of the time. He's had some really great moments for City and he's had some complete duds. He's for 100 million, he's not worth 100 million. Nor is Anthony. Like, I don't think we're ever going to get to a point where we're like, oh, 100 million he's worth all of it. He's worth more.
But if Haaland was bought for 100 million, you would say, well, that was a deal worth taking.
Yeah, exactly. True. But I think he's a good player. I think he's definitely better than, you know, what they had. He's an improvement. He helps.
Yeah.
But I also think he's a good player. I don't think he's like I don't necessarily think he's a great player.
You know who he reminds me of?
Who?
A faster version of Pepe.
Ooh.
I thought Pepe was great for a period of time. And, you know, fizzles out. Maybe that's a hot take, but...
I mean, you don't think he's a better finisher than Pepe? I think he's a decent
goal scorer.
Pepe
was a good finisher. I mean, where was he? Nice or Lille?
Nice, I think.
Okay.
I think he came from Nice. He might be at Lille.
Yeah, I think that's correct. I mean, he think he scored over 10, 15 goals the season before he came to Arsenal. And then he came to Arsenal and he started pretty well, if I remember correctly. I might not, but I know that at least he did score some important goals for Arsenal and you know, looked good in a lot of games. But I don't know that I like these kind of players anymore that are very much like dribbly, you know, like, for lack of a better term. I just don't think it's a skill set that wins games at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the system. If you're like an Arsenal or a City system, it doesn't necessarily work. And that's kind of the Jack Grealish problem of like, in some ways they slow the game down because they hang on to the ball. And it's like, yeah, they may draw a foul, which is, you know, in for some teams, that's great. If you're playing at a team like Villa, it's great to draw fouls and slow the game down a lot of the time. But when you're playing with a team that has the ball, needs the ball to create opportunities and break teams down, that stopping of play is not always great.
Right.
And so that's where it's like these dribbly players, these players that need the ball, like they can't, they're pretty much useless off the ball. They don't really offer you much of anything without it. That's where you run into the issue. I do think there's some real talent there. I mean, he's very good on the ball. He definitely can do things.
I mean, he's a great player.
He's a very good player. I don't know if I'm going to go to great player. And that's the thing is, I think he's good. I think he made United better. I think it was a good signing in that way. I do think at this point we maybe need to throw prices out the window and just say, does the signing make your team better? And then, okay, it's a good signing.
Yeah.
And
I kind of agree.
It's one of those things where it's like, where does the money matter? Is it a good signing in comparison? If you want to do that, it's like, is $100 million for Anthony versus $35 for Gakpo a good signing when United were linked to both?
Right, right.
Maybe not.
Yeah.
And that's where it's like it becomes a little more dicey. Though Gakpo has not had to play much for Liverpool, but has not really looked to offer anything so far.
And after the World Cup, you know, he had a good World Cup.
Yeah.
But watching him play, I don't know that it lends itself to a Liverpool or that it would have really to United. I don't know that he's there yet. I mean, he's super skillful and looked really good in the World Cup against certain teams. And then he feels like a player that you could lock down, though. You know what I mean? Like, he's not someone like I think a Saka where it's like, all right, even if your game plan is to pressure him all game and kick the shit out of him, like, it doesn't matter. He's still going to get on the ball and do his thing. And Gakpo, I'm not sure. I mean, still super young for the investment that Liverpool put in. I mean, I would take that any day of the week.
But absolutely.
Yeah, I guess it just comes... You're correct in saying, like, the thing that should matter is, does it make the team better? Yes. But it's so painful when it doesn't work. Like, Arsenal with Pepe. Or Jadon Sancho with United right now doesn't seem like it's going to work out. You know, it's or Lukaku for Chelsea. Yeah. It's just cutting your losses on anything. I feel like over $50 million is really, really tough.
That's true. And that's where it comes down to, do they help the team? Because at that point, you're not quite really cutting your losses.
Yeah.
It's like Pepe, I guess, put bluntly, didn't help Arsenal. Clearly not enough that they moved him on. Do you get what I mean? Like, when you move somebody on, what was it, 2.5 years into a 6-year deal or whatever it is, it's like, I guess they didn't help the team that much.
Right.
So that's where it's, and Lukaku's a perfect, Lukaku did not help Chelsea at all. Like, they loaned him back to the team they bought him from for crazy money. Like, I'm sure they'll end up recouping like $50 million at some point from Inter next year or something. And they'll get, you know, 60, 70% of what they spent back or whatever it'll end up being, kind of like they did with Morata. And it's like, okay, so you bite your loss at that point. But it's tough. I guess you're right with that, is when you make that outlay of like that dramatic amount of money. It does impact what else you can bring in. And that's where maybe you have to look at the effect.
Right. I mean, for Chelsea, stuff like that doesn't matter. But like that, I mean, seriously, it doesn't. But that Pepe signing going wrong, it felt like it set Arsenal back a year. You know, it's stuff like that where if you get something right, then it can really propel you forward. But yeah, I mean, the market's nuts.
Yeah.
So it's hard to get good players for a reasonable price. Like, Mudryk should not have sold for $100 million.
No,
like, it doesn't make sense to me.
No, I think he's extremely talented and everything.
50.
He should have, I 60. Was gonna say 40. Like, he would have been a $40 million player just 2 years ago, even with the market being crazy then.
I know
he would have, coming from the league he was, it would have been like 35, 40 up front with $15 million in add-ons. Like, and we'll never know if those add-ons get hit. It would have been one of those type of deals. Like, that's where I view him at, because again, tons of potential, but we haven't seen it at this league, this type of league yet.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I don't envy the people that have to make the decisions to sign players anymore. I mean, it used to seem like a fun job, but now it's like you're investing so much money. And if one player goes wrong, it's like dramatic.
Well, I guess, and this is because, again, we don't have necessarily a specific thing to talk about, so we can dig into this a little bit. Because I want to talk about this in relation to Jude Bellingham and Enzo Fernandez, which is going to be, both of them are going to probably move in the summer.
Also Declan Rice, we should
Declan Rice as well. That's true. Yeah, Declan Rice too. But all three probably going to move in the summer. All three are going to move for probably, even Declan Rice is probably going to be 80 to 100. So they're going to move for a dramatic amount of money. I think all three are very, very good players. potentially great players, all three. I actually really like Declan Rice. I feel like some people are critical of him, and I think he's great. I think when I watch him play, I'm always like, wow, he would actually really help pretty much any team. Mm-hmm. He'd bring something to that team. What level do you have to perform at to get the moniker off of you? Like to us, like I was saying, to me, it's like, do you make the team better? Yeah, you're worth it. Mm-hmm. But to a lot of people, to be like, oh, he's 100, like Jude Bellingham is going to be 150 million. Like, he's going to be something crazy. He's going to be one of the most expensive of all time. And it's going to be like, what does he have to do for people not to talk about that every single time he's on the field?
Well, I think part of the problem is, like, with Anthony, for example, 100 million. It's like coming from the Dutch league to the Premier League, not entirely transferable, right? Like, if you're coming from the German league to the Premier League, the German league has more respect if you're performing there and you come to the Premier League. I think a little bit easier. So I think that needs to be taken into consideration, first of all. So that already has me, at least, questioning the price of someone like Anthony coming from the Dutch league. Also, Jude Bellingham has someone like that, or someone like Declan Rice, or not really in Enzo Fernandez's case, but Jude Bellingham and Declan Rice have been performing at a very high level for a few years now. So, like, time, you need, in my opinion, to get that moniker off you, or at least to not have it be the centerpiece of everything that's talked about. Like, you need to have a sample size first.
Yeah.
And you need to come from a respected league. Not that the Dutch league isn't respected or the Ukrainian league isn't, but it's not in the same level that I think
that
of
top tier
La Liga, the Bundesliga, Premier League. So that's part of it. But I don't know. I mean, I think if someone like Declan Rice or Jude Bellingham might be a better example, if he came to Liverpool for 150 million and he underperformed, you'd say, well, at least I could see why they brought him in. Where with you know, Mudryk, you could say, well, why would they bring him in for that much from the Ukrainian league? It didn't make sense to start.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I do question, like, what is the level to be like you performed at it? Like, at what point Holland? Does it stop? Yeah, I guess.
If you bought Holland for 150 million, no one would say a word.
That's true. I guess that's true. It's true because I guess look at Mbappe. When PSG bought Mbappe, they spent 130 or something, whatever. No one's ever
worth every single penny.
Yeah, so I guess that's true. I guess that's the level, but it's hard to perform at that level.
It's an impossible thing
especially
to achieve.
Especially if you're a midfielder. And that's the thing, too. Like, I want to, like, you're not going to see, granted, I will say Jude Bellingham and Fernandez, too, they score goals. Like, they're going to score more goals than Declan Rice will score. But what level do you have to perform to really get that? Like, I do worry about that if I was, like, if you're Bellingham, like, you know you're going to move for, like, a record fee. For a midfielder, like you're going to blow out whatever the record is.
Definitely.
And I would argue, based off of what we've seen, he looks like he's worth it because he looks like he's someone who would make every single team in the world better. And he's so young that your investment in him, which is why it's going to be so much, is you're buying 10 years of, like, you know, you're trying to 100%. Buy the entire length of the best point of his career. So. And I mean, you look at the teams that are linked with him. It's Liverpool, it's City, it's Real Madrid. It'll be Chelsea, I'm sure, too. We said Liverpool. I haven't really heard Arsenal link with him because I think they're more in on Rice. Because I think Rice is actually more what they need, which is more of a true defensive midfielder. Because I think they have that Bellingham box-to-box with Partey, and I think that they'd look more to replace Xhaka. Xhaka's obviously older. It makes more sense to go that way.
I won't tolerate Granit Xhaka slander
anymore. I'm not saying slander. I'm just saying he's older. He is an older player.
No, I know.
Bringing Rice in to fill that role long-term makes more sense
definitely.
To me. I mean, I will take all three at City. I have a lot of fear about City summer because I do think City... as a team that spends an ungodly amount of money, but City have always been a team that when a player goes over what they value them, they will not buy them. We saw it with Jorginho. We've seen it with, like, time and time again. We saw it this year with the curly haired bastard from Chelsea. What the hell is his
Cucurella.
Name? Cucurella.
It looks like they did a nice job there.
Yeah, it does. It does. But that was an example of they said 40. They thought they had him at 40, and then Brighton said no, 50, and they refused to meet it.
Yeah.
Even though they had a deal with him done. Like, he was liking posts of City things on Instagram for weeks. Like, it was done, and then it wasn't because they refused to pay. So if Dortmund come out and put a valuation on Bellingham that City does not agree with, they're not going to pay it. So that I'm interested to see where that goes. And I think with the money Chelsea have spent, I think with Liverpool having the season they've had, they're going to want to be investing. I think if Arsenal win the league, winning the league back
plus
in the
Champions League,
Champions League looks like a lock at this point. They're going to be there. And I really don't want to jinx this team and fall off a cliff. Knock on wood somewhere on for your sake. But like, this is the renaissance either way for Arsenal. So, and we're seeing what that means already with investments they're making. So
yeah,
like there's going to be money spent.
A whole lot. This summer is going to be nuts. I mean, January has been nuts. January is usually so quiet. Yeah. And if someone signs for 50 million, you're like, oh gosh. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Chelsea are transforming the game right now, yeah. feels like, and mm-hmm. it's not a good thing. Yeah. I mean, seriously, like it's annoying that, like, not just because it's Arsenal, but because like Mudrick wanted to come to Arsenal, was like fangirling over Arsenal mm-hmm. on Instagram. Like, oh, Mikel Arteta's best coach, all this mm-hmm. stuff, like in post followed by the Arsenal players. It was done.
Yeah.
Arsenal just needed to get another 5 mil. And then Chelsea come in and blow you out of the water.
Yeah.
It's stuff like that is like, it's game breaking in a way.
But yeah.
The hope for fans like us is that it comes back to bite Chelsea in the ass, because how many times can you lose on a player like that?
That's true. That's true. And again, Chelsea are in a weird spot. This is either going to work out, like they're either going to be back instantly. Like next season's going to start and Chelsea are going to be right up there with everybody. But it has the potential to go the other way when you put that many personalities in the locker. It does.
Yeah, definitely. And
like, I think is, I actually think Graham Potter's actually a really good coach. I do. I think he's, but the thing is, and I use the word coach because that's what I think he is. I don't think he's someone, because at Brighton, he was not involved in the dealings and any of that. It was not, it's been talked about a lot. It's like he was the tactical manager, coach, like on the field, making the game plan, doing that. But he had a lot of time. He had time to put his system in place. This Chelsea team is so close to firing him. Like it's very clear. Like if they start like going on a run of losing matches,
yeah.
I think he's in real jeopardy that he could go. And then God knows where Chelsea, what, like I have no clue what's going on with Chelsea. Like I don't understand from the sacking of Tuchel, after you had spent money to bring in Aubameyang specifically because of him, that right there, like a week later, you sacked the manager. You just signed a player specifically because of that manager. Made no sense to me. I don't know where Chelsea's going. And
that's what they do, right? I mean, every other year or every few years, it's Chelsea win the league, they drop down to 10th. Yeah. They win the league, they drop down to 10th.
Or win the Champions League.
Yeah, something absurd like that. I do think they're going to be a lot better next year. Potter needs time. I think he's a good manager. You know, a vastly different challenge from Brighton, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it does make it a lot easier, though, when you can spend unlimited amounts of money.
Yeah.
But it also it does pose a challenge to find out how to put your squad in place.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and Chelsea had a weird situation, which was the amount of injuries that just compiled when they did force them to, like, that's they had true. To bring people in. That is the truth of it. They did need to bring people in. They didn't necessarily need to bring in to the level they have. Mm-hmm. Like the Joao Felix loan actually made total sense to me. Like I got that move. I get it for him.
I was hoping Arsenal would get him.
For him being linked to Arsenal and United, I don't know why he chose Chelsea from that standpoint, if it was truly his choice. But I get it from Chelsea's perspective. Pay to them, which is, you know, a small amount of money to bring in an elite level talent that can help you when your team is decimated with injuries. It made total sense. But to go out and just be buying other players with no real rhyme or reason, at least how it feels, it's been kind of crazy.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe the funniest thing that's happened so far this season is Joao Felix getting a red card and being suspended for what, like 20% of his time at Chelsea. insane. I think that cost him like $2 million out of his salary to miss all those games, which is hysterical. But yeah, I mean, Chelsea are boom or bust. I think it's going to work out for them. I mean, like you said earlier, talent typically wins out. So I think it's going to work out. One other team I wanted to talk about was Newcastle. Newcastle sitting, what, third or fourth at this point?
They're still in third.
Sitting third place. Haven't invested the amount of money that you would suspect at this point, right? Like for the level of success mm-hmm. that they've already achieved, they have spent nowhere near the amount we would have probably predicted.
I agree with that. I will say, though, that obviously they made the signing of Anthony Gordon yesterday.
What are your thoughts on that before we go any further with Newcastle? For 40 million,
yeah.
Seems 40, fair.
40 million for a young English talent from another Premier League team. Do I think he's necessarily a 40 million? I don't know.
Earlier in the season, he looked like.
But I would say he's good. Yes. He's got a lot of talent. Like, I've watched him play and been like, this guy's good. He's in a bad team, because Everton, a bad team. He was in a very bad team.
That should be the last team we talk about.
Yeah, Everton. I did want to talk about them. And it hasn't enabled him maybe to get the best out of it. I mean, he was linked with Chelsea in the summer. Like, that was close to happening at one point. I think he's a good player. I think it's worth the risk on a young English talent for 40. I think it's good. What I wanted to say, though, is Newcastle may not be done. I don't know if you saw the rumors today that they have made, I guess it's been rejected so far, but they're trying to get James Maddison before the end of the window.
Really?
Yes.
That
is a great signing. I love the way Newcastle are doing this. Mm-hmm. I think the signings they made have been very smart. They remind me a lot of ways, like I said, of the way City built when they first did. That. Where it was like the Gareth Barrys and the James Milners and the Lescotts and like good players.
The Dan players Burns. Targets. Yes,
players that were good enough that ended up helping City win their first, you know, win the FA Cup and then win the league as they added the cream talent with the Agüeros and David Silvas and the Yayas. But like, every signing can't be a superstar. Mm-hmm. You need to build a team. And they're doing it piece by piece, and I really like it. And I mean, they've got some really, really good players. Obviously, Bruno Guimarães has been excellent.
Which now, in retrospect, seems like a bargain, right?
Yeah. And then Boutman might be even a better signing than him. He's been one of the best defenders in the league. You could argue he's been the best defender. Mm-hmm. He's been very, very, very good. And again, a fair price. I think he was in the 35 to 40 range. Like
Trippier has been incredible for Newcastle since they signed him. Burn's a son of a bitch, man.
6'5" right back.
God, man. He's good. I like Dan Burn a lot.
But the only one that really hasn't worked so far is Isak. But that's been a lot of injuries. So
but
it's
he's
hard
been
to,
hurt.
That's
every
like his
time,
injuries, yeah.
Every time he's played, he's like, he just came back, and I think he assisted a goal to get them through the first leg of the Carabao Cup.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Newcastle are a really, really solid team. I love Eddie Howe. I mean, the fact that teams like Everton didn't take a chance on Eddie Howe when Bournemouth went down, stuff like that, mm-hmm. it just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, it seems so clear sometimes. And Eddie Howe, like, as soon as Newcastle signed him, I mean, I think we both really liked it.
Yeah, we did.
The thing that I guess was concerning about Eddie Howe, the only thing, was that, like, how was he going to manage this much money after he managed, like, Bournemouth for so long and didn't really have anything to spend. But what a great manager. What a super solid team. If they can add goals to that team, which they will, they're going to be a problem for the next... decade. They look like a Manchester City, like you said.
Yeah, they're doing it the right way. I think if they can bring Maddison in with the addition of Gordon, I think they have a real shot to make top four. I think those are two additions.
The odds are in their favor.
Because this team is very good, but they don't necessarily score a lot of goals. They score enough. Like, they score a good amount. They're not what they were like last season or whatever. They struggled.
Yeah, no.
But if you can add players like that can create, James Maddison is a hell of a player when he's on his day. He's 100%. A hell of a player. And that, to me, would be a perfect signing. I think that would be great. I think it makes a lot of sense for Maddison, too. I think he's
gotta
been
get
overdue
Leicester.
For a move.
Definitely. I mean, he's been linked with Arsenal and other teams for the last two seasons. Mm-hmm. It's time. Leicester are kind of middling at this point. They've fallen off. Before we talk about Everton... Spurs, I mean, they stink, man.
There's nothing to talk about with that team.
They stink. That's it.
That team has 36 awful. Points. I don't know how. They're the least. They're talk about not fun to watch.
Awful.
They're awful to watch.
Dismal.
I don't understand what they're doing. They're a team that they're an example of what I said before, where like sometimes talent is just enough. Mm. That's what it really comes down to with them. Sometimes having better players than the other team you play is enough. And the reason they have 36 points is sometimes having Harry Kane, having Son, Kulusevski, Bentancur, sometimes having those type of players is just enough. And you can play like shit and go down 2-0 or go down a goal in the first half and then just score 2 goals in 2 minutes and salvage a win. Like, yeah. It's just as simple as that.
I think that is absolutely correct. I just want to say, like, top to bottom, without Harry Kane, without Kulusevski, and this season, Son has not been himself.
He's been hurt, though, and yeah. like, he's had a lot of different issues.
And, you know, I don't think Son has, you shouldn't be talking shit about him.
No.
Basically,
no.
because he has been stunning
for as long as he's been
in the league. But, you know, aside from those three, that team is awful. And I guess Bentancur's had a run.
Yeah, he's been good.
But, like, that entire back line is dismal.
Yeah, not a good year for Romero, huh? After people hyped him so much Romero up last year.
He's like a bull, man. He has like a lot of Rob Holding in him where it's just like, I don't know. He's a solid defender, but sometimes you can be too aggressive. And he strikes me as someone that I wouldn't trust. Like a David Luiz, like a late Arsenal David Luiz, but a better version, obviously. Yeah. But Eric Dier is dismal. Awful. No, should not play for a Premier League team.
Should never play for England. I've talked about this. Insane. I think since we've done the podcast, insane. I don't understand what Eric Dier is supposedly good at outside of being a hothead. Talk about like
nothing.
He's not good at anything. He's not good enough to be a center back, and he's not good enough to be a midfielder.
I completely agree. Good. But worse than him is Longley. Longley is fucking horrible. Well, who thought he was good ever?
I think when they got him on loan, both of us like, why? Like, he's bad. He's not good. Like, awful everyone player. Knows he was terrible at Barcelona. He was horrible. And he's horrible at Spurs. He's bad.
Emerson Royale, same thing. Yeah. Bad player. Richarlison has done absolutely nothing. I think fine player, but when are you ever going to put him in over that front three? You never will. And then Perisic has been a disappointment for Spurs, too. He's done absolutely nothing. I thought Perisic was going to be a good signing.
Yeah.
Always plays well for Croatia. Had an amazing season at Inter before Spurs signed him. And just done nothing.
Yeah. I mean, they're such an odd... Their transfer strategy hasn't made that much sense lately.
No.
Bring Danjuma, they completely hijacked the move. I think he's a very solid, very good player.
But why?
But where's he going to play? In their formation, where's he going to play?
No clue. It doesn't make sense to me. You know, a lot of respect for Antonio Conte, but he's not done a very good job with the Spurs team, I don't think, to date. And he, you know, the story will be that he hasn't had backing, but he has, right? Like,
yeah, they've brought in players. This is the thing. Yeah. Like, Conte, but that's Conte's story everywhere he's ever been. Yeah. Like, he is consistent of always complaining about how he's supported, about who he has. He's a great manager. He's a great manager tactically, like, If you can deal with the style that he plays, which is not for everybody, it's not for me personally.
No,
but he wins. He's a perennial winner. That's what he is. But he complains everywhere he goes. I mean, Inter brought him in Lukaku, brought him in all these things, and he complained that season about not getting funding. And it's like they literally just like spent their most ever to bring in your striker. Yeah. Like it's sometimes a little ridiculous.
He's the worst. He is the worst. Spurs are the most unlikable team in the league, in my opinion. I think you might agree with me.
Yeah, I mean, they're up there. I mean, Everton are up there,
that's,
too.
That's the perfect transition because Everton are officially becoming the second most unlikable team. They went, well, I guess up or down. They went down in the power rankings for unlikable when they sold Richarlison, which is a good thing. And now it looks like Sean Dyche is becoming their manager after they finally fired Frank Lampard. First of all, we knew that one was shit from the start. I hated Frank Lampard at Chelsea. Thought he was terrible. Then Everton jumped on him when they had the chance. Horrible. Mm-hmm. Horrible. He has brought that team into the mud along with a lot of different factors. Everton are completely in the mud. They're horrible. And then, you know, now they're bringing on Sean Dyche, potentially the most unlikable manager in the league right away.
And, like, I actually don't think it's necessarily a bad hire.
I think it's a good hire.
That's the, like... They're only 2 points. Like they're on 15. Wolves are in 17th on 17. Like it. Sean Dyche he's made a very long career of keeping teams in the league. Obviously, didn't quite work out at the end at Burnley, but like, which Burnley Vincent Kompany, fantastic. Look like they're coming up. But I think he's a good hire. I think Southampton and Bournemouth are for sure worse than Everton. Like Everton still have some decent players and they showed themselves well in like the City game. Like there's some talent there. But I mean, you can't tell me that the other teams that are in that relegation area, Leicester, Forest, Leeds, West Ham, Wolves.
All like, better.
They're all better than Everton right now.
Maybe Forest.
Forest has the most points of all, and they have 21 points.
But
they're like Chelsea. They're like Chelsea light too in terms of like spending money.
I know
they've signed more players just for cheaper. They buy like 10 players for 20 million every day. They just got Chris Wood too.
I know.
Like they're all over the map.
Still, maybe the funniest signing of all time is Chris Wood to Newcastle.
Yeah.
Specifically, not because Chris Wood was worth anything, but because Newcastle just needed to fuck Burnley.
Yeah, we got Wood. And then they also Nottingham Forest trying to get Keylor Navas. I don't know if you know
that. I did see that, yeah.
Which would be a great signing.
I know.
But Dean Henderson, I think, is only going to be out for like a month more, so I don't really think like it's necessary, but I guess when you're trying to stay in the league, you do what you got to do.
Yeah, I guess for them, you think like the cost of bringing in Keylor Navas is much less than the cost of going down.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. Everton, I mean, I think, like you said, Sean Dyche is probably a good appointment. A good manager, was, you know, a solid team in the Premier League for a very long time with Burnley, where he had almost the exact same lineup every single year. An all-time complainer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it will be good for Everton. They need someone who's going to come in and make them scary again.
Yep. Yeah.
I think what's so weird with Everton, though, is that like a year or two ago, like we were like, Everton are going to be in the top six. Like they're really changing things over there. And then Ancelotti left and the team has been in the mud ever since.
Yep. Yeah. I think the biggest issue, this is like, is they have no clue what they want to be. Ownership doesn't know. I mean, I saw a tweet and it was like the most accurate thing. I said, if your two manager targets are Bielsa and Sean Dyche, you have no fucking clue what you want your team to be.
Two ends of the spectrum.
Like, that's the thing. It's like, really? Like, they could not be more, like, more different. And those were their two top targets.
Yeah, bizarre.
Like, they don't know what they want to be. And they need to figure it out. I mean, I can tell you, like, we know how they're going to set up. Like, they're going to be defensive. You're going to see, I would hope, the one thing I would say is I don't think they've played McNeil enough since getting him from Burnley.
Yeah.
So maybe this will be his chance to finally get back in the team, because I actually rate him quite highly. I think he's a good player. Obviously, Tarkowski is going to be right back at home. And maybe, I think we'll probably see more of like Neil Maupay playing games now. Like, just all the shithousery players. Like, Yerry Mina must be happy. Like, Sean Dyche is a perfect manager for Yerry Mina.
Yerry Mina is a shithouse and he's just a shit player.
Yeah.
I mean, double whammy for him. I'm so upset that Arsenal are going to be playing them and Sean Dyche will be their manager. They're going to have the new manager bounce at Goodison Park against Arsenal. It's like, just fuck off already. Guy won't ever leave me alone. Sean Dyche is like my nightmare.
He's just such a whiny bastard. That's my issue with him, is he's so whiny.
No one manages a team where it's like, go out there and kill everyone and stomp on everyone and then complains about every little tackle in the post-match. It's like, pick one.
Yeah.
You're either hard or you're not.
Yeah.
And he is oscillating.
Oh, good word.
Yeah.
I like that.
It's a good one. Very good vocabulary. Good. I just brought it right back down.
Donald Trump. Yeah. I got the best vocabulary.
It is very good. But Everton, I'm disappointed. A team that I once enjoyed watching quite a bit have completely fallen off. They stink.
Yeah, they do. There's no other way to put it. They're bad. Honestly,
yeah, they do.
Like, I thought of the other day. Like, I the way their fans have reacted to, like, this whole, it's a shit show, everything going on there, would not be upset if they go. Like how we felt about Burnley last year, when we were like openly rooting for Burnley to go down. Now I'm all in on Burnley. We got company on board. He's changing the culture. They're playing attacking football. I'm all in. But last year, we took pride in watching them
we
fail.
We did. We sure did. And so, I'm gonna be low-key rooting for Everton to go down. I will miss them if it happens, but they've deserved it the way that club has been managed in the last 2 to 3 years. And, you know, maybe it is just Ancelotti leaving really left them in a bad spot, because they were building completely around him.
Yep.
And I mean, since then, right downhill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they made some bad transfers too, though. Like, a lot of their transfers didn't work out. Like, Moise Ken became just like not like everybody was. We loved it. Everybody loved that signing, and then that failed. And the Decore really never lived back up to the player he was before.
Or Allen.
Allen, and now they're both gone. I know Allen's gone. I don't know if Decore's gone.
Decore's still there.
He's still there. I think he's just hurt like he always is. Like, it just, none of them really worked. James, obviously, once Ancelotti left, he's like, okay, I'm going to go play. Some of them really don't care where. I forgot where he went at that point. He just needed to, he wanted to get out. So it's just kind of, you know, it's kind of sad in some ways.
Well, too bad, I guess. You're bringing in Sean Dyche. Now you've completely transitioned into the dark side. So disappointing, but again, probably a good thing for Everton. Anyways, Jimmy, I think we are up on time. We probably went over our allotted time here of an hour, but that's what happens when you get us back in the studio and not over Skype. I hope everyone has enjoyed us being back and enjoyed the enhanced audio quality.
Yes. Top tier.
Top tier. Really, it's night and day. It's a lot better in person.
Well, we can do this now. We're a post-COVID world.
Right? I know. It's true. We just had COVID, so we're immune anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
But I will say, I'm going away in two weeks. Yeah. So maybe we'll squeeze one in before then, or maybe we'll do it.
We could try. Afterwards. We could even a shot, one, a quick preview.
Yeah.
The Michael's flying away preview.
That's right. But yeah, anyways. Thank you all so much for listening. And Jimmy, hit them with the plugs before we go.
Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Soccer Mostly. Hopefully Michael will give us some nice pictures from his trip there, from the matches. You can email us, mostlysoccershow@gmail.com. And we always appreciate the reviews.
Yes.
Only appreciate them if they're 5 stars, though.
Yes, that's true. We haven't gotten one in like 2 years. So
yeah, we're
someone
due.
Leave us a damn review. It's not that hard.
2 seconds.
Leave us a review. All right. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.